Good evening. I'll call to order the 7 o'clock session of the March 8th, 2016 meeting of the Santa Cruz City Council. Ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Noroyan.
Here.
Lane.
Here.
Terrazas.
Here.
Posner.
Here.
Comstock.
Here.
Vice Mayor Chase.
Here.
And Mayor Matthews.
Here. So there is one single item on this evening's agenda. It's a proposed amendment to the city's camping ordinance brought to us by Councilmember Lane. And before we get into the actual meat of the meeting, I want to just lay out how the meeting will go. I'm going to ask Don to present his item and speak to it as fully as he wants. Then we'll have an opportunity for council members to ask questions either of Don or of our staff, who will be here as a resource on any issues that they may want to explore more fully. And after that, then I'll open it up for public comment. And at that time, I'll ask how many people want to speak. I did anticipate that there would be a lot of people wanting to speak. And so we'll see how that plays out in terms of time restrictions when the time comes. I want to make sure that we have plenty of time for discussion and action. And so, and the other thing I want to mention too, a lot of people are holding signs. It's a standard request that we make that you not hold the signs in such a way that they're blocking the view of the people behind you. So generally that means hold them maybe at chin height, but not higher, because we don't want them blocking the view of the people behind you. And if I see them rising up higher, I will make a point of asking you to lower them again. The other thing I do want to just point out, we do have general rules of decorum for our meetings. The official rules or guidelines are on the ledge of the window back there. But in general, we ask that you listen with respect to all points of view, and expect others to extend that same courtesy to you. So with that very brief announcement, Don, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Hey, thank you very much. And I created a series of slides to help present this item, so I hope people can follow along. So as I'm sure you know, I'm presented a proposal to make some amendments to the city's camping ordinance to remove references to sleeping as a violation of the ordinance. And I'm going to dive right in. So I do know that I've heard from many people that this issue is a can of worms and that I'm opening it up. But I do want to suggest that whether or not it was on the council agenda tonight, it is already a can of worms that has been open for decades in Santa Cruz. So first I want to talk a little bit about why do we have a camping ordinance? How did that come to be? And I do know that we've had a camping ordinance for a very long time. And originally it was designed or created because, being a beach and tourist community, we had a phenomenon of many people with their RVs or their tent, you know, would come camp on the beach or park their camping RVs in the neighborhoods. And that it was not really about, quote, homelessness at that time. It was really about just tourists who were imposing a little too much on this community. But later, over time, as homelessness emerged as a real phenomenon in this community and in communities all over the country, it became more used as a way to address both homelessness and probably somewhat, related to that phenomenon of people kind of passing through who were just on the road and stopping here for a few days, who people were found offensive in some way. So I want to really emphasize this portion. I put it first, essentially, because I've heard so much commentary about, well, why are you going to make this change? We need, you know, we have all these problems associated with camping and people sleeping outside, and you're just going to make it even, you know, you're wiping away the rules that we need to have to deal with this phenomenon. But I agree. I think we do need to have rules on all of these concerns. For instance, we do have a real problem with encampments. That's an actual Santa Cruz area encampment from the not too distant past. At the same time, we do already have law that deals with encampments, and this is part of the camping ordinance that's in place now, and this is the part that I'm not really proposing to substantially change, which does essentially ban setting up a campsite any time, day or night, in the city of Santa Cruz. We obviously have a problem with littering associated with people camping. And I would say this is perhaps as troubling as any single issue that comes to that the community sees and that the city sees. So I don't want to minimize it in any way. But I do want to point out that the city does have pretty significant ordinances associated with this. For instance, we have a very specific ordinance about littering near in any way that would cause litter to enter any of our watercourses or drainage areas, and it really even prohibits just littering in general in this ordinance, even though the focus is on waterways. And then additionally, we have a separate ordinance that also addresses littering more generally. Another concern, very serious, very real, is public defecation. And again, we have a law on the books right now, I'm not proposing to touch it, that we make that illegal, as it, I believe it should be. Another concern that comes up fairly often is people kind of occupying portions of parks in a kind of an ongoing way. Again, the city has pretty much in every park hours set, and then we have an ordinance that allows the city to enforce those closed times, so people are not allowed to be in parks generally overnight. We have an ordinance about, we have an ordinance for lying down on the sidewalk. We have a problem with it, and we have an ordinance that no person shall lie down on a public sidewalk in any of the commercial districts of the community. And then additionally, we have another law that says no person shall obstruct or interfere with the flow of pedestrian traffic or vehicular traffic. So again, on sidewalks and on walkways, we have an ordinance that bans that. People are concerned about occupying a business or residence doorway. It is something that happens here frequently. We again have two different laws that we have at our disposal to address this. Every person, first we have a state law that is essentially the state trespassing law does not allow anyone without permission to occupy any of these spaces like doorways. And we also have a municipal code section that very specifically zeroes in on business premises and whether people are occupying those spaces. And then on top of all that, because we do have these general campsite problems, we also have an existing ordinance around public nuisances, and it allows the city to enforce a public nuisance situation, and that can include, I want to note, even when there's campsites that have illegal drug activity, public drunkenness, sale of stolen goods, public urination or defecation, and excessive littering. Again, another ordinance we have to deal with these issues. So, as I said, I do believe we need rules on all of these things, but do we need to have a rule specifically on sleeping? I don't believe we do. Now, I want to show you a little portion of a letter that the city received from the Chamber of Commerce as they stated their opposition to my proposal. And it noted that it has quoted me first as saying, I wonder what the harm is when a government penalizes people for behavior they cannot and should not avoid. And then this is the chamber's own language. The chamber, like Lane, believes that this rings of the absurd. that our policies address those without a home as a homogeneous population to be solved with blunt instruments such as a camping ban also seem preposterous. I could not agree with them more. And I do want to note that their next sentence, they do raise an issue about concern about people sleeping in cars. And I will return to that issue in just a moment. Another way that I think to look at this ordinance that is, if not preposterous, at least questionable, is to not change our ordinance this time would be the same as the city saying, one, that the act of sleeping outside at night is so harmful to the community that it needs to be illegal. Sleeping outside needs to be illegal. People who are found to be sleeping outside at night should be penalized for that act, even if they don't have anywhere else to sleep legally. And that it makes sense to fine those people for sleeping outside at night, even though the fine will not be paid and the fine has no deterrent effect at all. And that it's okay for a person to sit on a bench on Pacific Avenue at 2 a.m. as long as that person stays awake. We're essentially saying with our ordinance that the harm comes only when that person falls asleep. And I would raise that question rhetorically to my colleagues. Would you vote on a motion that said that is the position of the city? I think to leave the ordinance the way it is to say yes to a motion like this. Now, another way to look at it is to look at this picture. This act right here, this is legal, but this is illegal. Sleeping out of doors is legal in the day, but not at night. If this is not an illegal activity at 6 in the evening, why is it illegal at 6 in the morning? This isn't a Santa Cruz police officer, but it represents a situation that could easily happen here, where a police officer would be able to go up to a person sleeping on a bench at night and say, you can't sleep here or you'll get a ticket. And the person on the bench saying, where can I go? What should I do? And the officer could say, the law says you either have to stay awake or find a shelter. And I know there aren't any shelter beds available right now. And the person on the bench says, what if I try to stay awake, but I fall asleep? Sorry, the city law says you are subject to a fine at that point. So I want to pause here to reflect on that, because that is not, I want to acknowledge absolutely my experience is that our Santa Cruz police officers handle these issues very sensitively. But why do we put our police and other enforcement officers in this position? Why have we made a breakdown in the world of human services and housing into a law enforcement issue? Because that's what we've done with the sleeping ordinance. And I raise these questions, which I've shared with some others, how many people who get sleeping citations pay the fine, and how many people decide to stop being homeless because they receive one or more sleeping citations. Now, I could not find any firm data on this, but pretty much everyone I talked to who I think is knowledgeable on some aspect of this said that the number is pretty close to zero. But here is some data that we do have, and that is that there are approximately 500 individuals unsheltered in the city of Santa Cruz. Approximately 30 emergency shelter spots are available between April and November for those 500 people. So that means that there is no shelter for more than 450 people each night. Now, on top of that, some folks who I was working with did a little research a couple months ago, and they found that during the 7 weeks that they looked at, there were 77 sleeping citations during the 7 weeks in September and October of last year. And that is literally sleeping citations, not other municipal code violations or other camping violations. It's specifically subsection A, which refers to the act of sleeping. So why is it that we seem to want to maintain ordinance as it is, the provisions of the sleeping provisions in the ordinance. I think the two things that I've heard, and I know others on the council will chime in if I've misspoken or have missed something, but I think the two main reasons are that they feel like the city must not appear to be lax in terms of homelessness in this community. We have a big problem. Wouldn't we be encouraging more in some way if we did something that actually relaxed some ordinance related to people sleeping outside? The other is that people camping in vehicles in neighborhoods and commercial areas is a problem. Now let's talk about that one. Those two things, I mean. So are we lax and too welcoming? In terms of the laws and the services we have in this community, I would argue not really. First of all, on the left, you'll see a list of all the different ordinances we use to manage homelessness and some of the issues related to homelessness that we experience. We have a sit-lie ordinance for sidewalk sitting. We have limits on sitting on benches. We have laws about obstructing pedestrians. We have the camping ordinance. We have parks hours of closing. We have littering ordinances. We have public intoxication ordinances. We have laws around trespassing. We have the downtown ordinances. And now we even have the new RV parking law that the council just put forward recently. And at the same time, as we have all those rules, we actually have very few shelter beds. Day services are almost gone now. Those we help shelter in winter are presumed to sleep outside the rest of the year. Let me explain what I mean by that. We have a winter shelter. It accommodates up to 100 people. When April comes along, we basically know that those people are here in town, but we say, sorry, we're not going to provide shelter. It's not cold enough. But we do, so we basically know that they are going to be sleeping outside. Even many of those employed at a place like the Homeless Garden Project, people who are doing exactly what we hope for when they're experiencing homelessness, which is to get into a program that gets them employment and income, gets them on the right path. Many of the people who are employed at the Homeless Garden Project are without a legal place to sleep. And then we also have even a more recently a reduced emergency number of emergency shelter beds because the Paul Lee Loft shelter has now shifted to becoming more of a transitional housing style program rather than an emergency shelter. So what I think this means is it comes down to the issue of camping in vehicles. So I think that's a real issue, but it leads to this question. Does the sleeping provision in the camping ordinance really work for addressing the problem of people sleeping in vehicles near residences? Let's look at recent history right here on the city council. We saw pictures like this one. And because of that, just a couple of months ago, the city initiated a new ordinance to restrict the parking of RVs overnight on city streets. Now, that would not have been necessary if we had an effective camping / sleeping ordinance, because people who were camping in their RVs would have already been subject to citation. But the police were not able to really effectively enforce that law in most instances. So we had to come up with a different way to regulate it. So if we need an RV ordinance to manage people camping on our neighborhood streets, it demonstrates that the sleeping in vehicles provision of 6.36, which is the camping ordinance, is not effective in limiting this problem. We, as I think demonstrated, we clearly have a lot of ordinances. I think what we're short on is enforcement of ordinances, emergency shelter and other legal places for unhoused people to sleep, and ordinances that actually work well to manage the situations we're trying to manage. So, shifting to a more positive view of this, perhaps, what does this proposed change actually accomplish if we remove sleeping from the camping ordinance? It aligns with best practices, aligns with federal funding guidelines, it improves our human rights situation, it addresses some legal and constitutional issues, and it has less impact, negative impact on people's lives. So let's talk about best practices. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which has under its purview the issue of homelessness in the United States, has specifically noted that criminalizing acts of living, laws that prohibit sleeping, are not a good idea. Secondly, we receive a lot of funding in this county from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. We have a person who the city and the county actually contract with to write our applications to the HUD for homelessness funding. His name is Tony Gardner. And I asked him to comment on the situation with new federal funding guidelines. And he noted that HUD has begun scrutinizing communities' efforts to reduce criminalization as part of the competitive grant-making process. In other words, the Department of Housing and Urban Development is saying you might not score as well on your application if you're not doing something to address your tendency to criminalize. Let's talk about human rights. The United Nations Human Rights Committee did a report on this broad subject, and the Human Rights Committee notes that such criminalization raises concerns of discrimination and cruel and inhuman or degrading treatment. And these are violations of the UN Human Rights Covenant, which the United States is a signer of. Another aspect of this, which is emerging especially recently, is that the United States Department of Justice, in a federal court case, issued this submitted this opinion to the judge. When adequate shelter space does not exist, there is no meaningful distinction between the status of being homeless and the conduct of sleeping in public. Sleeping is a life-sustaining activity. It must occur at some time and in some place. If a person literally has nowhere else to go, then enforcement of an anti-camping ordinance against that person criminalizes her for being homeless. And that's what the Department of Justice said. Then, in response to that, and perhaps some other factors, I don't want to overcharacterize this, the three cities in Southern California have also chosen recently to stop enforcing their camping ordinances because of concerns not just about these federal legal issues and constitutional issues, but other issues associated with just policing around homelessness. But it is really important to note that these are cities that are governed by the same laws generally as the city of Santa Cruz. They're state and federal laws. They have city attorneys just like ours, and they had some concerns about continuing enforcement of these kind of ordinances. And then lastly, in terms of what I think it would accomplish, is there would be less impact on some negative impact on some people's lives. I think if you ask a person experiencing homelessness or ask a social worker who works with homeless clients, citations for sleeping lead to sleep deprivation. And this one, I really, as you can see, I highlighted it. There are many people who actually, because of their concern about being cited, move to more secluded sleeping spots. And many of those folks are very vulnerable. And to move to a more hidden place means that they're also susceptible to being attacked in some way, and where no one else would be there to see it. And then, of course, there are fines that cannot and will not be paid. And then there are specific cases where, because there are these folks who have these citations and then can't pay them, and then they get a bad hit on their credit record, and they have a very difficult time securing housing. So these citations actually do harm, and they do nothing to help anyone in the community. So I want to return to this remaining concern about camping in vehicles, especially in neighborhoods, because this is the thing that I heard the most about, most concern about. And I want to just point out that we do have a variety of options. We've already initiated one associated with the RV parking ordinance. We could also create a permit program for a limited number of vehicles in very carefully chosen locations, or we could create one single location for people to sleep in vehicles. Either one of these can be done in a way that focuses on the sanitation concerns that people have. It can be limited to people with real local connections and not offered to people just passing through, and it can keep this kind of parking out of our neighborhoods. Or we could create an ordinance that more directly deals with vehicle camping in neighborhoods. One idea that I've heard floated is an ordinance that prohibits people from remaining in a vehicle on city streets for more than 30 minutes between the hours of midnight and 5 a.m. within 200 feet of a residential neighborhood. This would actually give police even a different tool that they do not have now to address neighborhood crime issues, because it would actually allow them to approach vehicles that had people who were not sleeping. And I would argue that people who are concerned about vehicles parked on their streets overnight with people in them are probably more concerned about the people who are awake than the people who are asleep. I should go back to just say I did discuss this concept a little bit with the city attorney, and he may want to address this later, does have some concerns about the appropriateness or legality of this kind of ordinance. So I don't want to overstate it, but I think it's the kind of idea that could be considered. And then lastly on this, I recognize that maybe there's a different idea out there about how to address this, because I don't think what we have now is working particularly well, and maybe we need to spend more time as a council and as a community looking at ways to address this concern while continuing to respect the basic rights of people who do not have a legal place to sleep. So in closing, I would just say I hope that we will stop the harm of making sleep a crime by fixing the camping ordinance. Let's improve our enforcement of existing laws, all those laws that I laid out early in the presentation that truly address the specific harms to the community. And let's figure out the best way to address the harms of vehicle camping in neighborhoods and perhaps other parts of the community that are impacted. With that, I'm finished.
Thank you. So at this point, I'd like to invite council members to ask questions either of Don or of staff members.
I just have a quick question for PD, actually, about the 77 tickets that were given in 7 weeks. So we have about 500 homeless people, and that looks like about 10 tickets a week. So I'm curious what circumstances the majority of those tickets were given. Were those on public spaces, private land? Were those numbers? Do you have that information?
I do have some statistical information that I can present to you. I'm sorry, Kevin Vogel, police chief. So I don't have it broken down in terms of the 7 weeks that were presented in the presentation. But I do have some raw numbers in terms of how many camping citations we issued in the aggregate last year, if that'll help you.
Yes, please.
Okay, so within the city of Santa Cruz last year, we issued a total of 1,913 camping citations. And then I've got that information broken down by beat, and I've got some significant information with respect to the downtown. I'll just go over the notes that I made for tonight's presentation. Of those 1,913 camping citations that we issued citywide in 2015, 1,555, or 81%, were issued for the sleeping section, which is the subsection A that Councilmember Lane referred to.
Do you have that broken down by time, by chance? Were those daytime or nighttime? Or?
I don't, but those citations were written for the sleeping section, subsection A1, so I would assume they happened between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. in the morning when that violation is applicable. And then we had 60 citations during 2015 which was a total of 3% for, and this is citywide, for people who were camping in their vehicles.
3%?
The most heavily impacted areas of the city by camping in 2015 were the downtown and the central beats. So 1,276, or 67% of all camping citations issued in 2015 were issued either downtown or in the central beat.
Do you have any way of knowing how many of these were complaint driven and how many just happened upon? Because I just want to share a quick experience that I had.
Sure.
I've been on one ride along and we came across somebody sleeping in a park, and we approached him to do a welfare check and then went on our merry way because he was fine. He was just sleeping. So I'm just curious, are they complaint based predominantly, or are they just, are officers just happening upon people?
So historically, we've only enforced the camping ordinance with a few exceptions. But historically, we've typically enforced it based on a complaint-driven basis. And so in 2015, 91% of our calls for service relating to camping violations were generated by citizen complaints. And the remaining 9% were self-initiated by PD staff. And that's calls for service. Now, the calls for service numbers were much larger than, or not much larger, but they were larger than the actual citation numbers for 2015. So we actually, there were 2,861 calls for service last year related to camping complaints. And of those 2,861, we issued 1,913 citations.
Thank you.
Sure.
David? Yeah, I had two quick questions. Chief Vogel, I know we've had this discussion for other areas, but can you tell of those 1,913 citations, how many were repeat citations? Were they the same individual or multiple?
I don't have that.
Okay.
I don't have that information. We didn't glean that from our records management system.
And then the other question was on from your slides, Don. I have for Don. I just was going to ask him on page 38. You know, you this is the slide that reads, we clearly have a lot of ordinances and we're short on different things. And I know that this is focused on a particular aspect of the municipal code, but the city has kind of focused a lot of funding on programs to address some of these issues. And I'm wondering if you could comment, rather than stepping aside from the ordinance, in terms of maybe are there unmet needs in terms of programs and how we would prioritize this outside of revising the ordinances, rather than looking at maybe some of the issues to get at the root cause, which I think has been a focus not only of the Public Safety Committee, and we looked at supporting the PACT program, but ways to kind of guide the county to help provide more funding to address some of these underlying causes of that we're passing ordinances for.
Wow, so there's a lot to say about that. I will try not to go too long. You know, one of the ways it's really important to answer that is to recognize that even though the federal government in some ways has really stepped up their efforts in the last couple of years around homelessness, their efforts have all focused on housing. And that is really the right solution taken large. But what's happened in the meantime, and we've seen it here, and it's not just here, is all those funding streams from the state and federal government have reduced their commitment to essentially what's called emergency services, whether it's emergency shelter, sort of drop-in emergency shelter, or daytime services. So one of the challenges we have, and I want to be clear, I think you know this, David, that I know that in this front, we don't have a lot of choices. We don't have unlimited resources. But we have this dilemma now because we want to follow, quote, best practices. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of reason to do that. But the federal government has kind of said, we, the feds, are going to kind of fund those best practices. And those other things that probably are important but aren't, you know, as valuable in, quote, ending homelessness, we're not going to give you any money for that. So we really are counting on you in the local community to do more with those emergency services. Or, I mean, that's at least the implication of their approach. And that's why we're part of why we're having this particular problem, and why other communities. I think you can, I'm sure if you, and I know you do follow, you know, news from around the country and around the state, you know, the kind of the street homelessness in a lot of cities in California, especially the coastal cities, is just really rising. And there, I mean, there's a lot of kind of refreshed efforts to try and kind of take this on. So I don't even, you know, I, even as someone who has a lot of opinions about this, I don't even know what I'd recommend, because I do believe that thing, like the PACT is a good example of, like, that is very oriented towards not just sort of immediate addressing the client's immediate need. It's really trying to put them on a long, you know, a step-by-step path to get them stable and in housing. And that's great, but that only reaches a fairly small number of people. And in the meantime, there's several hundred other people who aren't going to be accessing a program like that, and they're going to be sleeping outside.
I guess, you know, if I could just follow up and say, when I see that, it's like so focused on maybe the rule and the ordinance rather than looking, well, what are those policy suggestions so that we bring in those partners to address those underlying issues, partners in the county or even working with our state legislatures to prioritize some of the mental health needs, drug and alcohol addiction and treatment. And I feel like this, you know, when you say we're short on, it's really focused on the enforcement end, but there's also the other piece that I feel is missing in terms of where the policy recommendation is. So I'm just curious, and you, Ann?
Yeah, I mean, but I think, you know, I have brought up, and I reminded again today, you know, that for instance, there are a lot of people who sleep in their vehicles. It's absolutely correct to say that's not a great solution, but it's how people are getting by right now in a lot, and there isn't a better solution tomorrow for those folks. And so that's why I think it's worth us really thinking about that, you know, that maybe we do, you know, in collaboration with others, need to say, you know, there are people who right now are surviving and sheltering themselves in a vehicle, and that we should make some kind of accommodation for that, even as we build, you know, more, even more effective programs that don't rely on that in the long run.
Okay. Other questions of Don or our staff at this point?
Yeah.
Rochelle and then Micah.
So, you know, one of the things that you were presenting was that taking this out of our code isn't necessarily going to change the law, that we have all these other ordinances in effect. But from what I understand is that sleeping on the sidewalk at midnight with no equipment or with one blanket, it will no longer be a violation. And so there, that is a change. Another change is sleeping on the sidewalk at 6 p.m. with no blanket. Actually, that you can do that now, but sleeping in the vehicle would be a change, and then sleeping in a vehicle at midnight with a blanket would also not be a violation, and sleeping, setting up sleeping bags at noon, which is already not a violation. But so there are some things that will change.
Yes.
That, right? Okay. So, you know, that does, increase the amount of folks who can legally sleep out on public spaces on the sidewalk.
I agree it a little, but I, again, even I pointed out, for instance, it'd be pretty limited, because even if they're obstructing the sidewalk, then they aren't being cited under the camping ordinance, but they could be cited for obstructing the sidewalk. So it's, you know, this is not a comment on you when I say this. I want to be careful to say this, but this is why I thought the comment from the chamber about the absurdity is relevant, because, you know, if you listen to the discourse we're having now, it's real, but on some level, if you pull back, it's like, look at what we're doing here. We're kind of saying, gosh, you know, it's okay to sleep, you know, with, you know, in the daytime in a sleeping bag in the park or wherever, but then as soon as it's night, then it's not okay. And that's, you know, that's just like, that's really been sticking with me for a long time. Like, why are we doing that? So anyway, I don't want to, I think the car, and I do, but I do want to say that that's why I did spend time on the sleeping in vehicles, because I do think that's where it is more significant. But I do want to point out, and I think, you know, it may be worth, Chief Vogel, you know, if you want to comment more on this, but, and I'm going to make state an assumption, and then you can tell me if I'm close to accurate. But my understanding is that so many folks who are sleeping in vehicles are not cited even when there's a cause for concern, because if let's say they're in a van and the police see the van parked there and they think, and they maybe even got a complaint about it, if they knock on the door of the van and no one responds, they're done. There's really no recourse under the sleeping ordinance, even if there's someone sleeping in that van, because they don't know that they're in there, so they can't, and the person didn't answer the door, so they're just gonna, the police will leave in frustration, I think. Well,
but my main point in asking the question was, there will be a couple of changes, there will be a couple of extra things that are allowed that aren't allowed now.
Yes,
by changing this.
A,
okay.
A few things, yes.
All right.
I think I have one more question. It's for Chief Vogel. And I'm trying to figure out how to articulate this. But so as I shared earlier, when I went on a ride along, we approached somebody who was sleeping in a park, did a quick welfare check, and then went on our way. Had we done that welfare check and we discovered something illegal within that check, is that cause admissible in court? I mean, we approached him for no reason. If Don's proposal passes, then we didn't have the right to approach him. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, that's a big, huge question.
Right.
Because there could have been a number of other factors that could have led the officer to conduct some sort of a search that could have led to an arrest. Let's say, for example, the person was suspected of being under the influence of a controlled substance.
So they're just sleeping. We roll up on them, discover they have a bunch of drugs on them, say.
Okay. That's true. Then if there's no reasonable suspicion that would lead the officer to believe that they were engaged in some sort of criminal activity, then we wouldn't have any cause to really contact them.
So would there
we can
be...
consensually contact them and ask for consent, but we would have no reason to search or anything like that.
So in your opinion, do you think less welfare checks will occur with Don's proposal versus what is already on the books?
I would say yes. There's no violation. I mean, the staff's busy at the PD. If there's not a violation that they readily observe, they're just going to drive by.
Thank you.
Any other questions of our staff? Micah.
Do we have an approximate count? I appreciate the statistics on the tickets, Chief Vogel. Do we have an approximate count on the additional tickets given out by the Parks and Recreation Department? And if they have a similar percentage as far as which code they're applied to?
Those numbers I provided tonight were strictly PD numbers. I believe the director of Parks and Rec is here this evening.
Here
I don't know if he's got that information with him or not.
Mauro Garcia, the interim Parks and Rec director. So you're asking specifically for the camping violations for last year?
Please.
Okay. So we do have them, and again, we don't collect the detail of the information that perhaps PD does, but we had approximately 900 citations, and we issue citations for camping at approximately average of about 40 a month. So that's the average number.
I have a follow-up question to that. So your rangers, what hours do they work? Because they don't actually work overnight. So these are camping violations given during the day, so they're a little different than like a sleeping ticket. So how do they differentiate?
Well, a couple things. The sleeping tickets or the camping, we actually do come in early in the morning.
What time?
Prior to as early as 6 a.m.
Okay.
So prior to the parks opening up. So some citations are issued them. A lot of the camping citations are issued in the open space, where these are the camps that Don showed in some of the slides.
Can you speak to the conduct of your rangers when they approach somebody who's sleeping? Because at 40 a month, that's not excessive for the amount of homeless people we have. And what I'm curious about is, are there...
I can't stand it. Sorry.
You are welcome to leave. So you said you're averaging 40 a month? You said you're averaging... Did you say you're averaging 40 a week or 40 a month?
40 a month.
40 a month, okay. So what I'm trying to understand, because I haven't done a walk along with a park ranger, is do they do a welfare check and say, hey, you need to move on, or is it straight to ticket? What does a typical interaction look like?
The typical interaction is we look for compliance before we issue citations, and I think that's very similar to PD. And so if we'll come up to campers or folks that look like they're violating the camping ordinance, we'll look for compliance. We'll ask them to leave, get up and leave. In most cases, they will do it. But if they don't, or if we have to come back and do a return visit, then we'll issue a citation. So we do try to get compliance before issuing a citation.
And then is there a difference with the tickets you issue between somebody who is laying there with a blanket versus somebody who is sitting in a, half ton of garbage?
If we're in the open space and there's a half ton of garbage, yes, that's a whole different issue. We're usually issuing citations for littering, other stream violations, and camping, and so it could go into several violations.
Correct.
And in the parks, obviously, if during the open hours, unless there are other observable violations, drinking, smoking, those sorts of things, there are no citations issued.
Thank you.
Okay. I have a follow-up question. I think it's for the city attorney. So obviously, we're talking about a huge amount of city resources, 2,700 citations last year. How many of them are paid? And do you have knowledge about Councilmember Lane's presumption that very few of them result in any change in someone's status with regard to being homeless or not?
I can't really comment on the second question at all, but the question was raised by Councilmember Lane, I believe it was yesterday or Friday, as to whether we have a way to track the actual payments that result from camping citations and fines issued. Unfortunately, because that's all administered by the court system, we don't have a neat way to do that. So we can do research on an individual case, but we have to track it through the court system. And then so to gather that statistical information is conceivably possible, but I wasn't able to do that in time for this meeting.
Do you have a gestalt opinion? Like, is it more like 90% are paid or more like 10% are paid?
I'd be speculating on that. My speculation is that a significant number of them are not paid.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Kevin.
I can actually answer that question. So we did some research on this months ago, and we determined that approximately 96% of the citations that are issued go unpaid. We have a system whereby we use the city attorney's office when someone fails to appear on three or more violations within a six-month period of time, and then they go, a misdemeanor warrant is issued for their arrest. And so I think that's partly responsible for the small 4% that actually were paid, but the 96% was the number that was unpaid.
Thank you for keeping track of that.
Further questions? Okay, then at this point, I'm going to open it up for public comment. And as usual, I'd like to get an honest assessment of how many people would like to speak. So if you'd like to speak, please raise your hand and leave it up while we do a bit of a count, please.